Superpowers are fun to talk about, right? We got movies and shows about them. They're super cool. We see them with superheroes. We want to be able to do things we just can't normally do. Maybe we even make up superpowers. Like Julie made up her superpower of the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I'm going to run with that. That's going to... You're just giving me content. So, again, we might make them up. Superpowers are fun. Real power sometimes is not so fun to talk about. Right, it has various connotations when we talk about actual people in power, politicians, the wealthy, the elite, your bosses, parents sometimes, people in authority. Power gets a little bit tricky sometimes. But today we're going to talk about power. We're going to talk mostly, we're at church, we're in the Bible, about God's power. Because God's power is greater than all these other types of power. Of all the power that we feel like might get wielded over us or that exists in the world, God's power is better. And we're going to focus on God's power as we close our series on Acts. So to think about today is this. Power is powerless unless it comes from God. So power is powerless unless it comes from God. Now we're going to stop our series in Acts today, after today. We're at chapter 12. That's only about halfway through the book of Acts. The rest of it is super good. I would encourage you to read it. It has a lot to do with Paul's missionary journeys. A couple weeks ago, Julie gave a great sermon on Saul's conversion, and then eventually his name changes to Paul, and he does all these missionary journeys, and it's awesome. But we're going to stop here with the early church, and I think it's a cool ending because it talks about God's power, and it shows that God's power was a huge deal within the early church, but it's still a really big deal today with us as a newer church and just the church as a whole. So we're going to see in this story, in this chapter, an example of false power. This kind of power we might recognize today, in essence, some type of political figure. Then we're going to see God's power. And then in the end, we kind of, it doesn't always happen in real life, but we see a little bit of a face-off between the two. So that's what we're going to see. The Bibles are there on your table. I believe there's cool bookmarks the kids made that are in there to help you get to the right section if you want to follow along. It's also going to be right up here behind me. We're going to start with false power. I'm going to read Acts 12, verses 1. Let's see, through 4 as we get started. So Acts 12, 1 through 4 says this. It was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. When he saw that this met with the approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the festival of unleavened bread. After arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by 4 squads of 4 soldiers each. Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover. We will stop there. I'm still on the hot liquids. The voice isn't all the way back, but it's better than last week. If you were here last week, I hope you understood anything I said. All right, so our false power. We got this guy, Herod. This is Herod Agrippa. If you're familiar with the Bible at all, you've heard the name Herod. There are a number of Herods throughout. This guy, Agrippa, would be the grandson of a guy known as Herod the Great, who was one of the nastier Herods, I guess we would say. But Agrippa comes from a family line of rulers and leaders. He grew up in kind of this powerful family. Some commentators will say he kind of lived what you might consider a playboy lifestyle and then was kind of thrust into power by his family line. But he does come to power, and people kind of start to like him because it seems like this is one of those guys in power that he'll put down a threat, sometimes with violence, but he could also do it by being fairly cunning. He's probably smooth as his words, or he was a schmoozer, right? He kind of talked that sweet talk, and he became fairly well-liked amongst the people. Romans trusted him, and the Jews kind of thought, like, this is our guy. Like, we kind of like him because when he was in Rome, he was like a Roman. He's in Jerusalem, he was playing the good, observant Jew. Who he didn't like was the early church, this new Jewish Christian movement. This was a threat. Herod didn't like the threat. He deemed it disruptive, divisive. It increased antagonisms between the two groups. It riled the boat. He didn't like it. So he decides, okay, I got to do something about this. So he arrests James. James is a significant first one. James is a leader within the new church. But he's kind of, in terms of the leadership, a smaller fish. So he's like, I'm going to arrest him. I'm going to have him killed. And I'm going to see what people think. Well, the Jews were like, yeah, dude. Like, that was great. That met with approval. So Herod goes to the mindset of, okay, if some must be good, more must be better. So we arrest the big fish in Peter. He arrests Peter. Now he's got the big guy. And he's going to have him tried, but he's going to wait till after Passover, right? Because we're around that time. If we think back, Jesus' crucifixion happened around Passover. Now we got Peter arrested near the Passover time. This was known as a time when God delivered his people from slavery. So we're going to kind of look what is going to happen with Peter here. But all things said, we got this guy Herod. He had power, and he liked being in control, and he wasn't afraid to exercise that. I think control is a big piece of power, especially those with false power. They like control. So Herod was a guy, he was given some of his power being in this family line, being a political official kind of thing, but he did like the control. So as we think about our own lives, we have people that are in power and in control in our lives, but we also tend to give things control and power in our lives. I've shared before, I worked at a coffee shop for a number of years before my kids were born. And if there is something that people let have power and control over them, it is their morning cup of coffee, right? I mean, I'm up here on round 2.5 or something. Now, we had a drive-thru. The drive-thru was a blast because people would pull up, and we get people coming up. They'd be on, like, the morning conference call, and they're supposed to be in the office. And I'm coming up, it's like, hey, good morning, Angie, how are you? And she's muting the phone, like, stop. I'm like, you came, right? Because she's got to get her coffee before she goes. Best story was I had a guy come up. I didn't know him well, seen him a few times. He's like, man, got to get my coffee, my large one. I was like, okay, sure. Go to hand it to him. He's like, no. I'm like, what happened? I forgot my wallet. Like, okay. And like, you would have thought this guy like just got laid off or something, how upset he was. He's like, man, it's like, I got to have this coffee though. He's like, here's what I'm going to do. And now he's not quite well enough known to me that I'd be like, oh, just pay me tomorrow, which I would do with some customers. He's like, man, I just bought these $75 leather gloves. It was winter. I'm going to leave them with you as collateral, and then I'm going to go home and get the money. And I was like, it's like a $4 cup of coffee. Sure enough, he hands me these gloves, and I'm like, I'm going to do it. Just want to see what happens. And, you know, if he didn't show up, man, I got some sweet new gloves. So he gives them to me. No joke, 15 minutes later, dude comes back, $4, and then buys another cup of coffee. But he leverages these really expensive gloves for a cup of coffee, which, by the way, he could have made at home. But he gave that much power, that much control to his coffee. Power has a lot to do with control. We're always going to have people in our lives that have power. There's politicians, there's bosses, there's CEOs of your companies, there's administrators, whatever. And it's going to affect us in different ways. There are policies that get put into place in life, in work. All of this stuff happens. But even if there is a little bit of that sense of power over you and it affects you, the trick is to try to not let it control us, not let it overtake us. If we don't give this false power control, it actually diminishes the power it has. Now, it's not fighting against whatever's happening, but it's just kind of not letting it dominate your thoughts, not letting it dominate your life. I've had conversations with a few different people actually recently about policies they have at work, primarily with time off, especially as we come up on the holidays. And it's a tricky one this year because Christmas Eve and Christmas Day fall kind of on the weekend. So it's like, when do I get this time off? How do I use it? Well, different companies are putting in different ways of doing that. And it might affect you. It might be like, man, I wanted more time off to spend with my family and my friends. But the trick is with that, if it really bugs you, it's okay if it bothers you, but to not let it control you, to not let it affect all your conversations, and not give it all of this control and power over you. So keep the mindset, whether it's a person or a policy, these things don't have to control us. It doesn't have to have power over us. And what can be really helpful is remembering who or what does have real power. And that's going to be God. That's what we're going to look at next and right now. So we had Herod with his sense of false power. Now, let's keep going in Acts and look at God's power. Acts 12, I'm just going to read verse 5 really quick, says this. Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. Earnestly praying. That's my emphasis there with the underline in bold, because this is important. I want you to remember this. The church is praying for Peter. They are praying for his deliverance. They are asking God to use his power, all right? Now, I'm going to kind of do something a little different for this next section. This is a story. If we think about Acts, it's told as a story. And this next part, honestly, as I was going through it and reading some people's thoughts, it's got some cool comedic value to it. Like, this is kind of funny. So I thought, what better way to do that than to go back in to my theater days and kind of try to one-man show this for you a little bit. All right, so I'm going to take on the role of narrator. Peter, there's an angel, there's a woman named Rhoda, there's a bunch of apostles. I'll do my best to tell you who I am at the time. But I haven't played a big role like this since I was mayor of Munchkinland back in 2003 in The Wizard of Oz at Watertown High School. I know, the short guy played the... I know. Typecast. Whatever. It's not gonna be as crazy as you think it was. If I had more time with this, I would have made like Sam play a role and everybody else, but anyway. All right, so here we'll set it up. So Peter's in jail. Peter's been arrested. He's in jail, and Peter is asleep. All right, so Peter's sleeping. And what happens is we get this angel comes to see Peter, and he starts jabbing him in the side. Peter, get up. Peter, get up, get dressed. And Peter's like, what? Think about this. Think of the teenager when Ryan, back when Sam was living at home, would go in to wake Sam up. All right, and Sam's like, why? What? So Peter's like, huh? And the angel's like, Peter, get your butt up, get dressed, we're going. Huh? What? Okay, so then they go. He finally does. He decides, all right, I'm up. Let's go. So Peter starts following this angel. They walk right past the guards. I have no idea. Now, we have four sets of guards. That's more than normal. That's how big of a deal this was. Magically, here's the gates. They just open, so we're going. And Peter's like, this is a vision, man. Like, I'm dreaming. He's kind of looking around like, huh, okay, cool. This is a vision, but that's fine. It seems fun. They keep going. They get a block down the street. All of a sudden, the angel's gone. And Peter kind of does one of these. Huh, I'm free. And it's, that angel was truly from God. He rescued me from Herod, who wanted me dead. He rescued me from these other Jews that we used to kind of like each other. There's all this tension. They wanted me arrested or dead. I gotta go. I gotta go do something. So he runs off, right? We go to the house of Mary. Now we're at the gate. Right, so he starts knocking on this gate. So Peter's knocking. It's the house of Mary, from what we can tell. Probably a nice house, pretty decent. So he's knocking. And the servant girl, Rhoda. So Rhoda's going to answer. She doesn't open the gate. That's important. She says, who is it? Peter's like, it's me. It's Peter. And Rhoda's got to be like, oh my gosh, it's Peter. What do I do? She runs inside, goes and finds the apostles. Guys, at the door. It's him. It's Peter. And she's telling all these guys that are the leaders in the early church, right? The bigwigs, devout Christians, the one that are right now praying for his deliverance. And what do they say? You crazy lady. No. She's like, no, guys, like, I know his voice. I know Peter's voice. It's him. It's just his angel. Like, no, Rhoda. All this time, Peter's still there knocking. Nobody has opened the door yet. And Peter's still hanging out there. So finally, we do. We open the door, and they see him, and it's like, oh, it's Peter. Rhoda, why didn't you tell us it was Peter? Like, I did. Once again, the woman in the Bible was right. She was right. It was him. So then they all kind of get together. I imagine they're bro-hugging it out. Everything's great. And Peter says, tell everybody what's happened. Tell the other leaders. I'm good. Now I gotta go. So he leaves. So he tells them what happened. I've been delivered. And he goes, and we end scene. And the lights go black. All right, give me a second. Thanks, Sam. So there's this crazy story, right? It's ridiculous because he's asleep. He's woken up. Angel takes him out. And then nobody believes he's actually there. This is what gets me. They're literally praying for him in that moment. Then somebody says he's here, and they're like, nah, it's not him. They didn't trust God's power. They're asking for it, but they didn't trust in it. And I think that's the key for us. We have to trust in God's power. Like, we can say it. We can say we believe in God's power. We can say we trust God. But do we? I think there's two pieces to really doing this. The first one is to ask God to use his power. We believe he has it. We have to ask for it. Big or small stuff. And that's where we're supposed to go first. Now, we might still have to act at some point. Peter eventually, yes, did have to get up and walk out. But we need to ask for God's power first. Resist the urge to plan your fix on your own and then just ask God to stamp it. All right? The early church got this right. They prayed right away. They didn't start planning a prison break for Peter or trying to find some like high-priced lawyer to represent him. They just went to God first. Where they miss is on part two. They didn't believe that God was actually using his power. When what you pray for actually happens, believe that it's God working. You know, the apostles had that, nah, this can't be. We prayed for Peter's deliverance, but nah, he can't actually be here. He was locked up. He's like in chains with a bunch of guards. But he was. It's happening. And it was God doing it. God works through different people. He works through different things. But he is directing what happens. He's pulling those strings. So we have to believe and accept that. To believe that God's power is real, ask for God to use his power, and then believe it when he does. Believe that God will use that power that he has. All right, so we have God's true power. So we've had Herod, the false power, our politician. Then we had God's true power. Now we kind of see here the face-off. How is this going to wrap up? We're going to look at Acts 12, verses 18 through 24. It says this. In the morning, this was the morning after Peter escaped, there was no small commotion among the soldiers as to what had become of Peter. After Herod had a thorough search made for him and did not find him, he cross-examined the guards and ordered that they be executed. Then Herod went from Judea to Caesarea and stayed there. He had been quarreling with the people of Tyre and Sidon. They now joined together and sought an audience with him. After securing the support of Blastus, a trusted personal servant of the king, they asked for peace because they depended on the king's country for their food supply. On the appointed day, Herod, wearing his royal robes, sat on his throne and delivered a public address to the people. They shouted, "This is the voice of a god, not of a man." Immediately, because Herod did not give praise to God, an angel of the Lord struck him down. He was eaten by worms and died. Yeah, right? Not a great way to go. But the word of God continued to spread and flourish. All right, so what happens? We pick it up kind of the morning after the scene we just had. Peter's not there and people notice. Obviously, your big prisoner is gone. Herod's got to be thinking, somebody's going to pay for this. Heads are going to roll. So he interrogates the guards, finds them at fault, and from what we know, they were probably executed. All right, so he has to deal with that. He's probably embarrassed. Not good. Then the story advances. Herod is, there's a disagreement, Herod and some other regions, Tyre and Sidon. Not sure what the disagreement is, but they're butting heads. And the important part is they start to resolve it, and things are working out okay. So they get together, and it seems like there's going to be either some sort of feast or celebration where all the people are together, and Herod's going to come out and give a speech. Herod, probably not a guy to ever be shy about giving a big speech, gets up, comes out there. He's dressed in the royal robe, dressed to the nines, looking as good as he can, and he comes out and gives his big speech. And the people there love it. They eat it up. They're like, yeah, this is so great. This isn't the voice of a man. This has to be a god. And it's right here that Herod has a big choice. He can say, I'm not a god, I'm just a man, and give God the glory and the praise. He doesn't. He takes that praise. He accepts the fact that the people are seeing him as a god. And he is struck down right there. And he's dead. His power wasn't that great. It was false. He met his demise. But then as we read in verse 24, the last verse we had, the word of God continued to spread. Why? Because God's power was that great. Because God's power can reign. It's more powerful than this false power. One of the commentators, a guy named Dean Pinter, that I read on this says, about this section, said this: when a king who imagines himself a god kills and imprisons God's people, they are delivered from the clutches of the boastful ruler, and an angel of the Lord strikes with deadly force. God is more powerful. God's power, excuse me, is going to win the face-off every time. God's power is stronger. And what's really cool about God's power is it doesn't change. God's power is always good, right? It's never going to fail. So think of some, do you have something in your life like that? Do you feel like this is always good? This always works. This doesn't fail. Naturally, I couldn't do a sermon Thanksgiving week without talking about turkey. So Sam, Okay. My Thanksgiving turkey recipe does not fail. It can't. Ah, see? I got witnesses. It's always good. It always works. Here's what I do. This is the first one I ever did, by the way. This was 12 years ago. I was a baby. So on the left, that's pre-grill and then after-grilled. Okay. Now, personally, I could screw it up. I could not dress it well, do all that. But when I follow what I got going on up here, which is all the stuff I need, it's good. It's going to work again this Thursday. It worked last year. It worked the years before. People in here have eaten it. It's good. It always lasts. It always works. I get the thing, get the bird, get it clean, get it in the pan, put some rub on it, slather bacon all over it, dump some cream of mushroom, throw some carrots and celery around it, put it on the grill, and let it go. It's great. It tastes delicious, right? It always works. That's like God's power. It always works. It's always going to work. It's always going to be there. I think it's important to remember this because there's not always going to be a direct face-off with God's power and false power. They won't always come to a head like it did with Herod. It will sometimes, but it doesn't always. So we still just have to remember that God's power is strongest and it's built to last. If you think about people that you've had in power in your life, how many bosses have you worked for in your life? How many government officials have we all seen in elections? How many people in just different places of authority have we had? There's been a lot. There's only been one God. That one source of power has been constant throughout our whole lives. It was constant for the early church. It's constant for us as a church now and in our lives. Now, all these other sources of power will go away, will fade. It doesn't mean that they don't affect us a little bit. But God's power is going to be stronger. Nothing can strike it down. When everything else in your life maybe seems to want to control you, to put you into submission, to have power over you, it is nothing compared to God and his power. Now, God uses his power in his way and on his timing. It doesn't always happen the way we would draw it up. Oftentimes, it happens completely different than how we might want. It's also on God's timing. He gets to use his power when it works for him. Not always the timing we would want, but it's still good. It's still constant. It's still stronger. His power is always always there, and it will reign forever. So do you feel like, as you're sitting there, maybe hearing about power, is there something that has power over you in any type of way that maybe needs to change? You feel like something's just got this control over you, this power over you. What is it? Why do you feel that way? Then I would encourage you to ask God for his power over that, for his control in your life. Go to God about it right away. I say that a lot. Go to God. Well, I guess what we're supposed to do. So go to God and ask him for his power. And then believe that God is going to act. Believe it. Believe that he's going to act in his way and on his timing. But believe it. And then watch for him. Listen for him. See him work in your life. Because when it shows up and you see it, it is incredible. Because his power is greater and is stronger. And remember that it will win out. It will always be there because God's power is true power. Let's pray. God, I thank you for your power, that we heard about it today, that we learned about it. We saw the example in Peter, God, how you freed him from prison, how you struck down false power in Herod. And God, that's only one of the examples in the Bible. I pray that we would be people that would recognize your power, that would ask you for it. And God, that we would take note of things in our lives that are difficult, that have some control or power over us. And as we wrestle with those, God, I pray that we would all come to you about them and that you would just bring your presence and your control and your power over those situations in our lives. God, we thank you that your power is forever, that it always reigns, God, that it lasts, it always shows up, and it won't let us down. So God, I pray this week as we head off for a holiday week, whatever is going on, God, that we would still be remembrance, God, and be thankful for the power that you have. In your name.